You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Podcast Network. Find all of our shows at WeAreLibertarians.com.
You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. Learn more at WeAreLibertarians.com.
Welcome to the Balls Hog of Liberty podcast. This is episode number 342 of East Central United's favorite podcast. I'm Jeremiah Morrill, joined by executive video producer, audio engineer, guy in charge of naming things on Facebook for us, Mr. Zach Burcham.
Good evening.
Welcome. You're all talkative until we get on the air, and then you're like, nope, I have no interest in speaking to you.
I barely know what day it is.
It's Thursday.
I know, but my schedule is all out of whack. Eclipse messed it all up.
I blamed Steve. He scheduled it for a Monday.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what screwed it up. Today's episode, we're going to be continuing the candidate series. Have Middle District Commissioner Steve Jellinger, camera left on my right, and Dave Cantrell on my right, camera left, or maybe the other way around. I don't know. I've lost track of how the room's oriented. The sun and the moon and the earth all spun around, and now I don't know my left and my right. We're going to talk about the same issues we have the last few weeks with all the candidates that have been running for county office. This show is about our lives in rural Indiana. We're here to push your boundaries and make you think as individuals. Sometimes we'll provoke you, other times we'll make you laugh, but hopefully you'll always learn something new. If you are a dedicated member of the community, you are in the Patreon group, and you just got yourself an extra 15 or 20 minutes where we did what candidates do, and they tried weird food on the show so that they have stories to tell later down the line about the things they had to go through when they ran for office. That's the way it goes.
Cheers.
And they are, some of them are still trying to get the taste washed out of their mouth. They chose, what color we choose? So we chose the red.
Yes.
The red. So if you want to know what that is, join Patreon, and you'll get the download. We email it, the audio file to you right after the show is over, directly sent to you. There's a video of the show live streamed in a special Facebook group. And that's also where the show notes are, too. Although I don't know if I actually remember to put them in there today. Got them to everybody else. I failed on that front for you guys. If you do join, we appreciate it very much. But if you're at $50 more a month, you get a shout out at the beginning of each and every episode. Those folks are Jonathan Phillips of Andy Moore, Buick GMC, Anthony Meyer of Different Breed Trucking, and Sports Corner Newcastle, which did the embroidery on my shirt. So we got that going over here today. We thank each and every one of them. Candidate Series is sponsored by Weiland's Flowers and Ink and Ale Brew House. Ink and Ale is just getting ready to open up here in town be fully open and operational. I think they did a soft opening last weekend, and we're all very excited to have them in town. Does that all sound right to you, Zach? Did I miss anything?
Nope.
I don't have Dakota, so I have no adult supervision. I'm doing the best I can.
Nailed it.
All right.
You tell, according to the scoreboard, you've got 4 more episodes of him this year, and it shows.
I'm tied at 13.
Yeah, we're tied
with
13.
You and I have each missed one show this year. I'm one down of 300. I'm 341 for 342. It's a lot of shows. And if you don't like it, you know, we'll give you your money back. Unless you're a patron, we're keeping that. We already spent it on heat. All right, let's talk to the candidates. Enough of the businesses out of the way. The incumbent commissioner is Steve Jellinger. Remind the audience that you've joined us on some of the live shows. So we've caught you, I think, on Newcastle Main Street before and, you know, picked on you out in public. But I think it's the first studio appearance you've had with us.
This is true.
So thank you for joining us. Tell us about your background, you know, what you've been doing, and maybe the motivations for running for another term.
Well, a lifelong resident in Henry County. Matter of fact, counting my grandchildren, 6 generations that I know of here. Grew up rural Henry County, attended Blue River School, and then my dad was farming more ground. We moved to the Knightstown area, graduated from Knightstown, met my wife there, If she keeps me through November, it'll be 45 years. So big accomplishment there. And
we'll put in a good word for you. At least
well, I hope so, because it, yeah, in November, make sure you do that. Maybe she'll hang on to me for a little longer. Worked 41 years in Indianapolis for a construction company and retired out of there. Ran for this office. Wasn't happy with what was going on and decided to step out of my comfort zone and run for commissioner. And do it mainly because I've got both my boys still there. We have two sons, and they both still live in the county, luckily within just a few miles of me. And so I've got seven grandchildren, and they all live, obviously, with my children and their families. So I figured that this was a great place to grow up when I was a kid. And I commuted from here for 41 years, hated the commute, but I wanted to stay here. And now that my kids are here, I want them to want to stay here, and I want my grandkids to want to stay here. So the only way to do that is to be part of the political atmosphere that's going on. Hopefully you make it to where you leave it better than you found it, and that they'll want to stay here. So that was kind of my motivation, was to build on that, make my community better so that my kids and grandkids want to keep living here.
Very good. And then Dave Cantrell, tell us about yourself, your bio, introduce yourself, and why you said, hey, I want to make this an interesting primary this year.
All right. Yeah. Thanks for having me. Thanks for Steve coming over, and let's talk over the issues that's going on in our community. It's a wonderful thing to be able to sit down as adults and sit here and do these things today. We're blessed to do so. But my name is Dave Cantrell. That's not my given name. My given name is James Charles David Cantrell. And
that's a lot of names on the ballot.
Yes, it is. So, you know, luckily they put a space in there where they can allow you to run in the name that people know you as. And I've been Dave all my life. And 60 years old, running close to 60 right now. Not quite 60, but right there. My adult life has been in Henry County. was a police officer here in town in Newcastle for many years. Education-wise, I attended college in St. Augustine, Florida, where I thought I was going to be a fireman because I had an EMT background. Came in EMT when I was 18 years old. That's where I started my public service. Was very blessed and had enough people that believed in what I didn't know I had. And I even took ambulance runs out of my high school at Pendleton Heights, where I went to high school. It was a big farming community at that time. It's kind of grown more so to a Indianapolis donut community now. But back then, the adults were working at Chrysler or Guide Lamp or Delco Remy, and they didn't have fire service. So I was allowed to go to EMT school when I was 17, took the test when I was 18. And I was given, at that time, they called them pagers, and I would take runs from my high school. And
that's a really good way to get out of math class.
It is. It is. It is until you have that run where there's one morning in particular that's carried with me through these 60 years of life, where I had to take a run and go back to class the next period that I had after I got back from the hospital. And it was somebody sitting next to me's mother that I'd taken to the hospital. So I grew up quick, and I learned about non-public information quick. I learned about trustworthiness. I learned about loyalty, and learned that at a young age, carried that with me. Fast forward, I worked at Muncie for a while as an emergency medical technician. Then I started working at Methodist Hospital in Indianapolis, did that for about 10 years. Got really good at loss prevention for the hospital. And when you think about that, you're probably thinking like shoplifter type stuff, right? Well, that's not what it was. What I did was the narcotics investigations, where there would be a shortage on patient care floors with the automated Pyxis machines, which is much like a bank telling machine, right? And you would have to go through and do an audit and prefer charges to the prosecutor if you found wrongdoing, or they would do a probation program with licensed professionals. So I did that for about 10 years and I really earned my stripes per se in the narcotics field, learning what schedules were, learned about budgets doing that. Came back here, really just learned how to work the road and learn the streets of Newcastle for about a year, and was tapped to be the co-director of the drug task force. And I'm proud to say I did that for almost a decade.
You were a city police officer?
I was, yes. And the city of Newcastle. Did street work for about a year. And then I went into the drug task force and did everything from budgets to helping bid on how much we're going to pay for gas for this year in a car, how much we're going to pay for a lease, office space, salaries, things of that nature. And probably some of the most productive times, they've had some success after I left, of course, but probably some of the most productive times in the community was whenever my partners and I were together at that task force. We really did some good work.
So the motivation to jump in and say, hey, this year I'm going to get involved and put your name on the ballot and run for
president. Yeah, well, it kind of came, it struck me at the city council last election. I was interested in running for city council. And I approached the powers to be in the Republican Party, and there wasn't interest. They're pretty happy with what they've got. I know or worked with most of the people that's there on the city council. So, okay. So then I started looking at the commissioner's meetings online. And I saw, yeah, they're doing great work. We've got some good people running our department's heads for each division. You can get weights and measures, your health department, the street department, the sheriff's department, the ambulance service that we have. Great people there. But I, with my skill set, I know there's some other ideas that can be passed along. And got interested in going down that rabbit hole of watching these commissioner meetings. And Steve will probably agree with me. Pretty boring.
Sometimes. So, yeah. Sometimes they're.
Yeah. So yeah, I looked at that and I thought, you know, I've got some different ideas that I think can contribute to my community. And before I went to the drug task force, I was their teacher in town. I don't know how many kids I taught here in town, but they still come up to me today. And it warms my heart. I do know that we've got a brain drain here, especially in public service, our ambulance people. I've got family members that had to leave this community that they love, that they come back to, because they commute like you did for Indianapolis, but they go off to the donut counties to make the money that they have to have to support their families with the way rising prices are. I want to think of ways where we get more business to the county. We get more tax revenue in the county so that is going to be the support to keep the brain drain and the public service drain from exiting our community, from our family, for our friends, the people that we helped educate. That's where my heart lies. I want to try to do something to better this community.
Let's jump into the issues that we kind of outlined in the show notes here, and we'll start with you, Commissioner Dellinger. Kind of a broad question about county buildings. I know there's a number of projects that are happening right now, and then maybe some sales of some buildings that are going on. I guess talk us through the logic and the understanding you have as to. We made a decision that we're going to invest in the courthouse. I think there was a bond involved. We're investing in the courthouse. We're wrapping some things up on the Justice Center, some improvements on the
Masonic
Temple / new voting center. Apparently that's where we're voting now this year.
Yes.
The building just south of the courthouse, north of us here has been sold or is being sold. And then there's also some property out by Walmart that I think is in the process of being sold. Yes. So just kind of an evaluation of these county buildings and how you've been in this role 4 years now. So you've got some experience, how it's supposed to work and how it is working and taking care of the structures we have.
Well, the biggest thing is we had all these buildings that were basically empty. They were not generating any tax revenue for the county and they were in a bad shape disrepair that needed to be addressed before they collapsed or something else happened to them. It was our mindset that as commissioners and working with them, all three of us in the council, that it was beneficial for us to put these buildings up for sale, put them back on the tax rolls. Hopefully that we had businesses that come in and would utilize those and attract more stuff going on downtown.
The Hope Initiative building, I assume. Was that sold before you came along or that in your time?
It was sold. And really so far seems to be one of the bigger successful ones. As far as selling the EMS building, it was in bad shape, and it's been very well done as far as renovating it right now. We're hoping that somebody winds up in there. The annex building got sold. Luckily for us, we put clawback language in that contract. So if it didn't wind up having something done to it, the county had the right to take it back. So it wasn't just somebody buying it, using it for their portfolio or what have you, and then it just still sat there idle and empty and keep falling apart. We just repurchased it a few weeks back, and we sold it again. The RDC and the city are partnered up on that. They've got someone who's interested in it, so they're going to put some money into it, and hopefully they'll be, soon we'll wind up being renovated and have occupants in it. And then the lot out in front of Walmart, we have a tentative offer on it. I can't go into detail yet because now that's been finalized, so I don't want to jinx anything, but hopefully that'll have something there soon.
I was hoping we were going to get a county car wash again. I don't know.
I hear there may be one of those coming, a car wash coming too. So, and we're rebuilding the maintenance building here across from the old jail. And that thing had gotten in such bad shape. But the biggest thing was, and it was no one's fault, we've never really had the financial resources to maintain the buildings in our county the way they should have been maintained. And it wasn't directly because of someone dropping the ball. There just wasn't the resources. The revenue wasn't there.
Agreed.
We finally have, with the ARPA funds that came in, and I know I'm skipping ahead here a little, but
a lot of these conversations dovetail into each other, so it's fine.
So with that money coming into the county, it made it finally practical and possible for us to address issues that were finally getting to a point where if we didn't do something, these buildings were going to be beyond where we could save them. And nobody wanted to hear that. Nobody wanted to have that happen, especially not on their watch. I always said that if we were remembered for anything, we could do all the good works we could do. And 20 years from now, if the clock tower fell off the courthouse, they would remember we didn't fix it when we had the opportunity to do so. So we've taken a prime example here of using those funds that were never normally available to us to go ahead and refurbish buildings. And we've got DLZs going through all the things that need to be done. And we're doing the major projects on the courthouse first, as far as tuck pointing and windows and the foundation work, because the front corner of the foundation is in really bad shape. So those things are all going to be addressed so they don't get any worse. And then we're moving into the Masonic building and the Justice Center to try to, there's a few things there that need to be done and addressed and taken care of. We wound up moving all the equipment and records and things out of the old annex building that had been there for 20 years, moved them in. Because when you're selling buildings,
looks better if there's not a bunch of junk in it.
Yes. And when you're looking at buildings to sell, when we moved out, because we got the new jail built, I was proud to be part of that when we started, got that done. You have an old jail sitting empty. There's not people lining up to buy a jail. So that's one of those things that it's not really easy to move. So it just made sense to move the coroner's office and EMS into that building and use the cell blocks for storage of the records that we had to keep forever, moved them out of the annex and put them in there. So
those don't require running water or flush toilets.
There you go.
Yeah.
So those things made it a lot easier on us as a government, and it, put those things back where we wanted to put them. Been real proud of things like that that we've been able to do. You got the same thing with, we redid the lease for the Ivy Tech facility. They've been a great community partner. Definitely want to keep them. But the maintenance on that building was costing the county a bloody fortune. So redoing the lease, that got the county out from underneath the maintenance, still kept it to where if it's sold within the first 15 years, the county still receives some portion of revenue from it. But now it's Ivy Tech's to take care of. And like I said, I want them to stay, grow, because they've been a great community partner. And now we're looking at the YOC building. The rules have been changed a little bit by the state. So hopefully that youth detention will be able to open back up. We've had several counties offer to assist us in operating that once it, if it does wind up be, we're still negotiating that. If it winds up happening, that they're going to help us, which would, for us to do it by ourselves would be near impossible, I believe, because it's financially, it would be a pretty good strain. But, if they'll partner with us and we can make that work, that'll be, it'll save the county some money, having to house people other places. We can bring them back into here. And then these other counties, if they pitch in and help, like they're saying they're wanting to, because they, it's a, not just a Henry County problem, it's statewide. So you've got.
The YLC deals with younger folks,
yes,
right?
Yes.
So it's a 18 and under, essentially under 18.
Yeah.
All right. So let's hear from you, Dave, on the building, the county building portfolio. And if you have any differences or views or directions you want to try to take us, if you get a 4-year term as commissioner.
What I've been watching online, I've been pleased with. I really take note whenever those engineers come in and they tell us about the foundation you were speaking of. I listened closely to that and about the windows and what the problems facilitated with putting a new window in an old building, what that entails. Paid attention to that. I understand that's going to cost a lot of money. But do we want to let that clock tower fall down, like you said? I as a citizen here, don't want to see that happen. I did a seminar with a dear friend of mine through the court system called Loving Your Children Through a Divorce. And we use the old Masonic building for that. And I'm telling you, if that can be saved, great. You know, more power to everyone that's involved in that. If we've got the money to do that, I'm all for it. There's a lot of history in that building, and we need to teach those grandkids that you were talking about and my grandkids, you know, about those things. So all that makes sense. The part about the ambulance service working out of the old sheriff's department makes sense. If you've got to maintain that building and keep it standing, then why not use it and relocate those files that you're talking about? Makes sense. Are we wanting to talk about the jail expansion at this time, or are we
we can dovetail right into that. So in 2022, we opened a new jail facility. Mm-hmm. And we've had this conversation over the last few weeks with the other candidates that have been here. That, you know, we had essentially a hundred folks who were in really round numbers, 100 people to maybe a 200 or 200 plus headcount facility. And we've been hearing from candidates saying, hey, now's the time to add another pod to expand that. But the other side of that conversation is that we got all these extra people and the healthcare costs and actually housing that, you know, it's not free. Every extra person you put in isn't necessarily free. So I guess starting with you, Dave, do you think it's time to add it? Should we add it? And how do we pay for the extra overhead that comes with having a whole lot more people in there?
I'm not going to make any friends with what I'm about to share here, but that is the last thing we need to do, is add anything onto that jail expansion at this time. As a fellow that works out there at the sheriff's department, is that okay?
Yep, it's directional. So if you just turn it straight towards you, you'll sound better.
Goody.
Oh, much better.
Okay. So as a fellow that works out there at the sheriff's department, I'm part-time special deputy at the sheriff's department. They call me 33 Gopher. 33 is our number for the county. And I pretty much do a little bit of everything. I do process service. I do prisoner transports. I'm the guy that takes people to those medical appointments that you're talking about. I get to see those bills. I see what that costs. I see our head count daily, as that's emailed to me. I can say today I made a good move for the taxpayers today. I took four and moved them over to the state rolls today. So that's four less you'll see tomorrow, Steve.
That's good.
Yes. So there's good things happening, but we've got a staffing problem now. What's it going to be when we don't have the staffing to handle another pod full of people? We've got nurses now. A new service has came in. We've switched our nursing services and our medical providers at the facility. There's a new billing procedure in, but it's not going to make mathematical sense to add more people. I'm a study of history. Influenced by our past decisions. Kevin Costner, Field of Dreams. If you build it, they will come. If we build onto that jail, they'll come, and we'll put people in there.
I think they're already here.
Yeah, they are. If we build it, they'll come, and it's going to, it may be at what? What are they talking? Is it 14 million?
It's not, there's not a final figure in, but we're looking at somewhere between 10 to 14. Yeah.
Okay.
Is an estimate.
That's just to put that building there on the ground. That's to move the driveway. That's because we use that driveway to get back to the Sally Port to move a prisoner. That's where the trash gets picked up. That's where the deliveries are made. All that's got to be moved. And that's good road right now, unlike 200 North that we've got that we're in dispute with.
I heard that belongs to the state.
Yeah.
It belongs to DNR.
So
we're working on getting it back.
Yes. I'm pledging right now that I'm not sold that we need that. I'm thinking 10 to 14 million on that expansion. You better double that by the time you add the added cost of staffing, maintaining, medical. How do you offset that cost? Are we going to take federal prisoners in to make money? I don't think so. I don't think we need to do that. And history, you remember what happened at Geo Prison out here whenever they brought inmates in from Arizona?
Rioted.
How many million did that cost? You know, I think we need to live within our means. And I don't think that jail expansion is where we need to go. And I probably made a lot of people mad with what I just told you. But that's what I feel. I live it. I hear it. I breathe it. I taste it out there 5 days a week, sometimes six. When they call me on Sunday, I go too.
Steve, tell us from your chair currently how where you are today.
Personally, and I said this when I was running, we should have built it a lot bigger than what it is now. When we built it, it would have been cheaper. We probably could have done it then for somewhere between $2 to $5 million and added all that onto it. And I think the thought process, had it been bigger, was we could have done what we were paying for with the old jail when we were spending hundreds of thousands of dollars a year housing prisoners in other counties. We could have done that here to help offset that cost. That being said, what I look at is the fact that what got us to building the new jail, and you know, should possibly happen years before it did, but we had a federal lawsuit, and that lawsuit got us to where if we hadn't built the jail, the county was going to probably be mowed under by the federal government, by the money that it would have, we'd have been sued out of. So to me, are we going to wind up, because we're at capacity now, that if that somebody gets hurt, something happens, we wind up with another lawsuit, then we're right back where we were before we built that one. So which is cheaper?
The struggle I've been having with the we're at capacity is, and we talked about this last week with Whit Weaver, and I've lost my track of who else was with us last week, Zach.
I have to look at the sheet too.
But Scott Kuntz was with us, and we had this conversation about how it felt like we built a bigger filing cabinet, and people just aren't getting through the process. Mm-hmm. I talked to the sheriff, and I think about 8 or 10 people had actually been convicted and were serving time there. Everybody else was on this side of justice. I've heard from people that I trust very much that have said, yes, we have to do this right now because it's going to cost us that much more later, and we should have built it for 300. And I've had a lot of folks that I respect massively that say, no, it's pour money into the people, into the prosecutor's office, into, you can fix this with people, not with physical assets.
I don't know. To me, this winds up, you got several moving parts here and they all have to work together. So if you can get the sentencing done, just like what Dave said, if you're moving the people who aren't supposed to be in our county jail to the state facility or federal facility, wherever they've been sentenced to, and you get those out, then that takes care of part of that problem. But is that a large enough number to offset that cost? I'm not sure that it's huge, because I see the jail list too. It's not like there's, you know, 50 people that's going to be moved out of there every day. So that cost is, and this was the part that I struggle with, is when we built the new jail, the models that it was modeled after, this was supposed to take less people to operate, more efficient. Everything was high tech. So you weren't supposed to have all this added cost. It was actually supposed to be cheaper to operate in the long run compared to what we were spending to operate the old one. So now when we talk about not having the people and all the extra costs, I'm thinking, okay, this wasn't supposed to be the reality. And apparently it is. I don't know. I think we had a lot of people who weren't being actively sought after. And I'm not saying nobody was doing their job, but you couldn't throw more people into an old jail that you couldn't house. And we were already in such a bind with the federal government over that lawsuit and the ACLU. So you had to kind of back off a little, in my opinion, I think is what happened. So now there's such an onslaught because the new jail's open. So we're going forward with all this. You're filling it up faster than I think they had planned to, and getting all these people in and out, and the extra programs. If we add the extra pod on there, will it solve the problem? I'm not sure until you change the people. And I'm not saying that as far as anyone physically, but the mindset of how crime seems to be different now.
It is,
compared to what it was when we grew up. And I hate to say this, and I'm going to do what Dave just said, probably make people mad, because I don't believe jails should be a place that people want to be. I've wrestled with that for years, that we complain about how bad people are treated when they're in jail. I don't want them treated badly, but it shouldn't be like going to the Holiday Inn.
You don't want to make it comfortable.
Yes, because when I grew up, that was the last place you wanted to ever be, was in jail or incarcerated, because it was supposed to be horrible and awful, and you never wanted to be there. And it seems like we have somewhat of a mindset where some people, and it's sad that their home life has gotten to the point where jail is better for them to be at than what their home life is. And that's sad. And that's a society problem now.
So you guys get the headcount emailed to you each day and the roles that you have. Yeah. Is there any role in that headcount that you see from the commissioner, or it's just a number that you hear? Is there anything that you can do to affect the amount of folks that are incarcerated in the county jail at a time?
The only thing I think we can do as commissioners is to try to see what extra facilities or whatever between the court system, prosecuting, and trying to get, can we help that flow or move better? But we have no control on who gets arrested, when they're tried, when they're convicted, or if they're convicted. Commissioners, other than us seeing that number and trying to figure out how do we help facilitate getting that process moving to get people in and out. But we really don't have any control over that.
So the commissioner's office works with the probation department and some other folks that help push that through?
Well, yes. It's like every other department. They operate on their own. We don't micromanage and put everybody under our thumb. That's what we have department heads for. And I believe that's what they should do. But we're there to assist and facilitate and help them move through their processes. And if we can find a way that we can make it easier and quicker and help move people through and put things in place that will help work, then that's what we're supposed to do.
All right.
Yep,
absolutely.
Let me capitalize or expand upon what you just said. I'm with you. Okay. What I see on a daily basis is that mother that gets arrested for a suspended license. She's out trying to work. She's a single mom, got kids maybe in the backseat of that car. We've got to make arrangements as a police officer out here on the road to have those kids picked up. That car is going to be towed, and she's in jail. $0 in the bank. Those kids are either in foster care at this point or a family member's taking care of them. It's a money thing. It's a bond thing. It's a messed up situation. You've got an individual at home that maybe batters a wife, but he's got money in the bank. He can bond out and he's out of there tomorrow. But we've got this mom with these kids that has no money, and she'll be sitting in there in jail for maybe a month.
She's going to wait until she can find her public defender.
Well, I would much rather see, Steve, and I hope you agree with me on this. If we have dialogue with our prosecutor's office, Mike Mahoney, our prosecutor, I'm going to call him a friend. I think possibly, I don't want to fact check this, I may have presented the first case that man ever prosecuted as a Hendrick County prosecutor. I may have presented that case to him. He's a wonderful man. I respect him. We couldn't have done any better for our prosecutor in my eyes. I think he needs some help. Instead of that $14 million on that jail, let's hire some more prosecutors. Let's streamline that mother out here on the suspended license. Get that process. Do what we need to do as law enforcement officers in the judicial system and the prosecutor's office. Let's reallocate those funds that we're going to use for the expansion that we don't need to clean up that problem and alleviate the problem where we've got the people that have money and can bond out of jail today, tomorrow, or the next day. And let's concentrate on the folks that are hurting, that's setting up there.
All right. Let's, unless we have anything else to cover there, let's carry on, or else I'm going to have us here till midnight and then nobody's going to be happy. But it'd be a really long show, Zach.
I'm off tomorrow.
You got all night. You're good to go.
He's going back to Disney. He checked out.
I've got years to financially recover from that.
Steve, we had a massive big ticket issue happen this year with a notice of cancellation that came on the county's insurance.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that the council and the commissioners have been working very hard with our local agents to get insurance back in place. Now that it's kind of in the rearview mirror, do you have any comments on how we got there, what we can do to prevent it in the future, and maybe strategies that we can take to help buffer any expenses that are coming? Because there's a lot more exposure now for the county than there was 6 months ago.
Yes. We were lucky. There was a change in the way things were handled through law enforcement. Our carrier decided that their exposure, their liability in was too great for them to take that chance anymore. And so they said they were going to cancel us. And our broker, Josh, has done a phenomenal job. We now have 5 carriers that are willing to pick us up. We were lucky enough that the original quotes that we were given, our premiums were going to go up $1 million a year. Our deductible was going to go to $450,000. And luckily for us, he got that all. Our deductible went up roughly $250,000, which is still a lot of money. And it's going to be a financial strain to the county. And our deductible for everybody else stayed the same. It's roughly $25,000, and law enforcement went up to $150,000. And right now, when you looked at the original where it was and where we're at, they were horrible, and then it's not so horrible. So we're not so horrible. And so I feel a little bit better about that. Coverages that were coming in due to everyone having more hail damage, wind damage, tornadoes, and what have you, that was going to go up to $100,000. It wound up, because we were at $5,000 deductible, and it only went to 10, and because we were considered not to be such a risk here. So that was good news for us. So we're saving some money there. As far as stopping it, I don't know, because you don't know what's going to trigger it. And the thing is there's going to have to be a mindset change on how we handle things that come up in our county. We all know that society it's easy to file claims and it's easy to sue. I'm not trying to diminish anybody who winds up being or feel that they've been wronged, but it's just the society we live in. And sometimes you don't want to settle stuff because you don't think you've been wronged. But at the same time, when it's somebody else's money, sometimes you have to do it. You don't like the outcome, but that's just the nature of the beast right now.
All right. Any comments from your side on the insurance?
100% agree with what he's saying. The society has changed the way we do things. What breaks my heart is when I refuse to do this trolling stuff on YouTube and all that and what's going on and how we've been wrong. And I think you were even a victim of some of it at one point. I don't agree with that. I don't support it. I don't watch it. I don't get counted for it. I don't have time for it. I'm working 16, 18 hours a day. I don't want it. You know, it's evil what's going on. We've got these good guys over here standing at that courthouse door trying to do a job, trying to do what they're wanting to do, and they're being harassed. The playground bully has infiltrated the front door of our courthouse. I would like to see our commissioners.
What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean by these YouTube people that would come to our courthouse door and you know, carry on about how they wanted to carry a cell phone into that courthouse and do this or do that. Well, the flip side of that is you take this recording device.
First Amendment auditors or whatnot.
Yeah, whatever. Somebody told me that's what they call themselves. But what about this part of it? This non-public information thing. What if we've got one of these people in there running a live stream and they come across a piece of paper or something that's got your home address, home phone number?
What's on
maybe your social security number? You know, that's what we're running.
Very fair.
Yeah, that's been my concern when they come in.
So I would like to see the commissioner's office step up and do a proactive approach to keep that from happening, because I believe it would be possible identity theft, maybe, or attempted identity theft when they're in there doing that stuff. If they're broadcasting live on TV and these numbers come up, you can freeze frame that stuff. Somebody in Des Moines, Iowa can see what's going on. And then I've got the 92-year-old guy that's a friend of mine that says, "Hey, Dave, can you help me out? I've been frauded by Medicare for several $1,000s here. How'd that happen?" I don't know, but we'll figure it out and we'll help you out. And that's what we've been doing here of late.
So what change are you thinking that should be made as far as security, folks going into the courthouse or into offices? Obviously, there's a open door when you have public meetings, commissioners meetings, and the other where folks have to be able to allow to bring cameras in.
We're looking at, when we're redoing the courthouse, changing some of that so that that will be possible. It's a little difficult to do now. Plus, if you're closing just the line people to go in just certain doors, sometimes that's confusing when you have elderly people who come to the courthouse and they're used to coming in one door, and all of a sudden now they can't, and they have to go around the building to come in one door on the other end of a building, when it's just confusing sometimes to them. So you have to be cognizant of their feelings when they come up to the building. There's some language that's been changed governmental wise that makes it somewhat easier for us to handle those situations now, where before we were basically told to be somewhat standoffish because it was awkward on what we were allowed to say and do and what we weren't. And this is where it bothered me a little, was these people, just what Dave said, they come in, you don't know what information that they're able to view that's private.
Yeah, it's work product. And they're in there recording our work product from our employees. It's not right.
I mean, if they want to come in and just view and watch, I don't have a problem with that.
Yes.
Hey, this is America. You should be allowed to do that. But when you're wanting to go behind counters where everyone's private information could be exposed because someone's doing that work, then to me, you've crossed a line. And that's where I have a problem.
Entering non-publicly accessible areas.
Yes. We've put signage up now to help let people know, because that was one of the arguments that was given when they came in the last time, was these areas weren't posted. So there was no one to tell them that that's not allowed. And I come from old school common sense that if that's where they're working behind a counter, then, you know, you don't go in the bank and go behind the counter.
Exactly.
So why do you think it's okay for you to go behind a counter when you come into someone's office? Those were the issues that I had with it, that, you know, to me, it was common sense. You shouldn't, but I got the feeling they were pushing the envelope to see how they could trigger you into saying or doing something you shouldn't.
Yes. All right. Let's, we're going to try to pick up the pace here a little bit so we can get Zach home by 11:30. looking in the rearview mirror, we had $9 million in ARP funds that came from COVID. So ARPs, American Rescue Funds, whatever the heck it was, a word soup salad. but we had a manna from heaven, $9 million to Henry County. And, we've been talking with the council and the commissioner candidates about, hey, is this spent the way that you would have prioritized it? Is this the best use of the money? Was this an opportunity to, I think we plugged some holes in the short-term budget, but we've also invested in some buildings. So, start with Steve, since we're on this side of the conversation with you now, but $9 million well spent?
I think so. There's always, you can look back and always say, okay, should we have done this differently? Should we have done that? The thing is, $9 million when it comes to government is bupkis. It doesn't really go anywhere. And I know all of us look at and go, $9 million, what we wouldn't do to have $9 million. But when your cost of operation and when you're putting it towards buildings and you're putting it towards different departments, you're putting it toward roads, it doesn't go anywhere. When the cost of asphalt for a mile of road in Henry County ranges between $165,000 and $225,000 for a mile blacktop, and you have nearly 800 miles of county road, even the highway budget itself, and you're looking at $2 to $4 million, you're not getting many roads paved as far as mileage.
When your superintendent says, hey, we need to build this bridge, and it's $12 million.
Yes. Yeah. So I made the comment when we first got the ARP money, and it wasn't according to the federal government guidelines, which that's the other thing we were restricted if, when the money came down, was you can only use it for X, Y, and Z. So you had to go fall into those parameters of X, Y, and Z and say, this is where that money has to go. As it came in, they started relaxing some of those rules. So when you had started committing money to do these things, and all of a sudden it was like, oh, well, I could have used it over here. Because you can ask anybody that was on the committee when they asked me what my first three choices was for the $9 million, I said I'd put it in roads, some more roads, and then a few more roads, because I'd have spent every bit of it on the roads in Henry County to make them better, because we could use it. If you figure up the math on it, it would take $640 million to blacktop all the roads in Henry County. I don't think any of us in here will live long enough for us to have that kind of money on the county budget. So that's a reality that it's just there. We were never going to see it, but we try to do as much as we can with what we have, and you try to be as frugal with it as you can. So we helped a bunch of entities. We helped the volunteer fire departments. We helped shore up the ambulance service, and we put money into county buildings. We put money into the highway department, and there's a whole list, and I don't have it with me. I just go down through and tell you everything that we used the money for. We're down to somewhere between $3 to $4 million left, and that's supposed to go into the county buildings at this point, because that's not even going to finish the projects that DLZ showed us on that assessment. We were looking at, I think, $11 million, and that was just a 1,000-foot view of what, when you get into a building that's 100 years old and you're trying to fix something, you tear something apart, there's 10 other things you find that you're going, oh crap, I didn't see that.
So you have $11 million worth of repairs to make on the three buildings that we started talking about earlier, essentially.
At least. Yeah. That's just the broad picture view of what it's going to take to put those buildings back. And you're down to, like I said, we're between $3 to $4 million. And then there's the bond. So we have that as our secondary alternatives. But even with that's not going to cover what it's going to take to put those buildings back.
Real quick, just a question that came in from the chat. You mentioned the cost to pave a mile of county road.
Mm-hmm.
That's using asphalt from wherever, but county equipment to pave.
Yes.
Okay. That's not having a third party contractor.
It could be too, because we do a little of both. It depends on how it's bid out. But since we've invested in highway equipment now, we're able to do more of the roads ourselves. There's a lot of things I've been pretty pleased in the last, 3 years I've been in office, 3.5 now, that we've done more work on our county roads. We replaced a record 88 culverts this year that essentially were failing throughout the county, and that's more than we've done in probably the last 20 or 30 years, I think, because, and it's nothing against anybody that was here before. It's just that we've kind of restructured things that we're able to go ahead and we put different people in charge of things. And now you're able to address issues that we used to let go or just band-aid. I remember when I first got elected, the highway budget was split into thirds between the county commissioners.
North, south, and middle.
Middle. And I never understood that. I thought that was the dumbest thing I'd ever seen in my life because I thought we were tying the hands of the people that we were paying to fix our roads. So one of the first things I suggested when I was elected was we give the highway budget to the highway department. Because why are we hand tying them, telling them you can only fix so much here, so much here, and so much here? The nice thing is by letting them have their budget back, they're able to take, and Joe Copeland's done a fantastic job of, he goes through and rates all the roads all through the county. And then he has a chart that he puts up. We're going to do this here, here, and here. And it's pretty much countywide. He spreads it around and we're getting more, to me, more miles of road worked on now than we've ever done.
16 months ago, my road got paved, which is amazing. My mailbox got knocked down and the county fixed it within the day. But I still have a riser that hasn't been put back in, Zach. I got a Henry County pothole that deep in front of my house because for some reason they never got the precast concrete piece to bring it back up to road level. So I've just got this giant divot. I get to watch cars bounce out of it all day long.
City struggles with that too.
That's to slow you down. We don't want you
that's
to get hurt.
That's our speed, or white estate speed bump on the entrance. Yeah. It's on the exit, though. It's not as they come in. It's on the exit to the neighborhood. All right. ARP money, my friend. How did we spend it right? Should we other priorities if you had a four-year term?
Yeah. I heard Steve mention something about, you said the money went to the volunteer firemen and maybe our ambulance
service. We gave each of the volunteer fire departments $10,000. Yeah.
That's great. That's great. I know that from being a past volunteer fireman, I was assistant chief in another county for a while for a fire department, that, you know, just like with law enforcement that I'm very familiar with, maybe you are too, those vests that we wear, they expire after a certain date. So does that turnout gear.
Mm-hmm.
And that stuff is not cheap.
No.
So $10,000 will probably outfit maybe what, four firemen, maybe about?
It depends. Yeah.
We've got that going on. It's been reported to me, and I've passed Rushville or Rush County hospital ambulances on three, but they're going to our hospital. And I've had people tell me, we're calling Rush County to transport patients from our hospital in this county to Indianapolis for treatment. Why was there not more ARP funds made to make our ambulance services more solvent to where we could pick the phone up and have them there in 5 minutes as opposed from driving from Rush County to work for us?
Because there's two sides of that. Our money is not eternal. It expires. If you can't sustain what you're doing, then you can't keep just saying, okay, we're going to give you money. Then when it runs out, you're back to square one. Then problem's still there. We had asked the hospital to help assist on some of these things. They did not want to, for whatever reason, I don't know.
Yeah.
We can't afford at this point. We're getting there, but we don't have a paramedic on the county service. That's why we use the city for all ALS runs. We do BLS. We're doing advanced BLS right now for our ambulance service. We just got some people qualified for that. They've done a phenomenal job because when I was elected, that service was bankrupt.
Which one?
The county service. Mm-hmm. And it had been for quite some time. Just there was money that had been shuffled into it somehow or another from wherever.
Now, that would have been back when your predecessor was running that, right?
Yes. Okay. And that they had run out of money to do that with. So we were faced with it either went away completely or we tried to figure out a way to restructure it to get it to where it was solvent again. Our current leadership there has done a fantastic job of bringing that back around from the brink.
So it's very difficult for me to understand how ambulances work, but the best I can understand is that there is the immediate urgent need response ambulance that's going to go pick you up mm-hmm. and take you to the hospital. And then there's a transport ambulance that's going to take you between hospitals. And what we have lost as a community is the transport ambulances that'll take you between, it, say you get to Henry County, but you now it's urgent and you've got to get to Methodist.
You have
that's what
if,
we don't
if
have
you don't,
in the community.
If it does not require a paramedic, our ambulance service can still do that. Now, they just got advanced EMTs, so now there's more of those runs they can take. And they've been trying to get – there was – in the past, there was a lot of bridges that got burnt between – different entities because of personalities or politics or whatever it was. Those bridges have been mended, a lot of them. They're starting to get back into that flow again, and it's all a matter of people trying to reach out and get the handshake agreement again, saying, hey, we're willing to do this and we're willing to step up to that, fill that void that had been created. I don't believe it was intentionally created, but I think it was just a conflict of personalities at the time, and maybe part of it was funding, but now they're trying to fix that, and they're doing a phenomenal job of doing so. I've been very pleased with where they're at right now, and they're continuing to grow and continuing to get better. There was a lot of billing things that were messed up, so they weren't even getting paid. And when you have your Medicare or whatever that only pays this amount to
25
you,
to the dollar,
it you can't operate when you're charging off those that added expense. It's sooner or later, it's like any business, you can't run it at a loss for very long, it goes away. And that was the
you
sad
send
thing.
A bill for $1,000 and they decide they're gonna pay $250 and you yes. take it or leave it.
Yes. So at that point you're at their mercy, and what are you going to do? And here's the thing, you have if you pull up to get someone and you know when you're taking that run, you know, here's this person, your humanity kicks in. Are you just going to not do it? No, you're going to do it. But it comes at a cost. And that's the sad thing. And I said this at a meeting we had at Middletown when we were trying to figure out what we were going to do with the service. I said, it is very sad to me that this comes down to we've put a price tag on a human life, because essentially that's what happens, because whether we like it or not, it's a business. And if you don't treat it as such to where it actually is somewhat profitable, the county doesn't have the financial resources to continue to fund that, because eventually that money runs out. So what do? You have to make it some sort of adjustment to where either it's offset or subsidized somewhere. And if the county doesn't have the money, where does that money come from?
So Dave, let's get into the conversation of those department heads and the role that the commissioners have in appointing department heads, in filling board positions. There's all kinds of boards. I know the Memorial Park Board has been a revolving door, including me. I was a part of it for a minute, and I'm glad to be retired from my service to the Memorial Park Board.
Chicken.
I served my tenure.
You can go back.
No, I'm on the merit board now. I'm good. I'm cured. I have very committed to that one. But how do you decide who gets these appointments? What network do you pull from? How do you? It's a big way that the county executives shape the way the county operates, and you leave a legacy long term.
I think you're hitting in my wheelhouse right now, by being so closely associated, but yet in the back seat of how things work, and especially in the EMS field. I look and I see some of these committee assignments, and it didn't make sense to me, but correct me if I'm wrong, but we've got a traffic safety committee that one of the commissioners is a part of. Is that right? Or some kind of a traffic. And I know the person that's doing it wasn't the one that was a retired state trooper, and it wasn't the one that was our highway department superintendent that's setting or providing figures to these entities that maybe could possibly give us some extra income coming in here from the federal side and the state side of what's going on. It's proper placement of your resources. And I came very good at that, working on a shoestring budget and finding the right person to put in the right place to get the task accomplished. I would look at each one of these assignments, not so much of the department heads, because those are set. I mean, you know, they're going to have to really not want the job to lose the job. I'm talking about the little boards, the little assignments. We've got a storm sewer drainage
board that we do.
Some of that stuff's, a lot of the storm sewers is city because we haven't, so we're not involved with the city.
Yeah. But I mean, out in the county, you've got stuff that goes to the ditches.
We have a drainage board. And I'm on the drainage board. Yeah. So,
and so, you know,
and it's very effective and with the people that's on it, and they're very proactive on trying to fix a lot of the drainage issues. But you have to fight that with the landowner because you can't force them to do things that you would like to see them do. A lot of them are starting, especially your farmers are starting to come back to say, you know, some of the waterways and things that used to be there need to be put back. So they're willing to help and they're thankful that some of these ditches are being cleaned up and taken care of. So right now I think we have an excellent drainage board and they're doing a phenomenal job there. As far as, like you said, with department heads, most of your departments within county government are elected officials. So they're pretty much set. The only things you have are, your highway superintendent, which is hired, and your park board are appointed. There's a few other odd and end pieces here and there, but most of that is set within that department where they have their chief deputies and what have you. They take care of those.
But y'all have appointments like to tourism board, to the health board, all those. There's a lot of,
you pick one, maybe, as far as depending on which board it is, because the council will have an appointment, the commissioners will, the city would, some of your townships or your little smaller municipalities appoint. So those are all varied that those people pick. And it's usually, the sad thing is, whether we like it or not, nobody applies for those positions.
That's what I'm talking about.
You're sitting there waiting to appoint and there's nobody to appoint. So what do? Go out in the street and grab somebody and say, you will do this? You can't do that.
Back when, I know when Nate Lamar was the county council president, he would always publish a list of, hey, here's the offices that are up, and they would kind of try to recruit folks.
And we
is that process still active? Yes. And the county publishes
right now, we've got nobody open. That's why we haven't had to do it for a while, because we've got everything filled. But there's some people who are coming up that will either ask to be reappointed or could, or we still put it out there and say, hey, this is an appointment. If it's park board or whatever, some of it's done by political party. So you got to have so many of each on whichever. So those are the requirements.
You can only have so many of each. That's the trick of it.
Yes. So
you get capped out.
Yeah.
you can only put so many Republicans in high office, gentlemen.
Yes. So you have to pick between, you know, and those are the applicants you get. So that's how you have to choose, is this is where you're at. This is what you've got. But if you have no one applying, then it becomes oh my gosh, what are we going to do? So then you have to, basically try to beg, borrow, and plead to get someone to say, are you interested in this? Because we need someone to fill it. You put it out there. You hope people apply. Some do, some don't. But you still, even when those people apply, you try to pick the best qualified person out of there that's going to represent that board and the county's best interests and the community as a whole, because you just don't want to put anybody on there, because sometimes we've had board appointments where you knew that this individual was going to cause more destruction on that board than they were good.
Or they don't show up.
There you go.
Yeah.
So you have to have people who are willing to do it. And sometimes you don't know. You could have the person with the best intentions in the world when you're interviewing or talking to them. And then when they get there, it's like Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. They're not near what you thought they were, and they don't do the job like you want them to do.
Doesn't necessarily turn out.
That's where I think I would shine. I don't have a number figure out, but I'm going to say, and I'm pretty confident in this, probably over 1,000 people that I've sat across the table from and was able to offer a job or decline their employment application. And I've had those difficult conversations. I can pick the good ones. And I still have some of those people coming up to me today and shaking my hand and say, thank you.
Tell me about your view of Memorial Park. That was one that was really contentious, and I know it's settled now, but a future for Memorial Park, and if you're a county commissioner, any priorities you have for it.
I'm going to go back to when I was 10 years old and my parents used to drive from where I was from in Markleville, and we would maybe go past the Memorial Park and you guys had the tornado slide. I'd never seen anything like that where I was from. That Memorial Park is special to me. I'm proud to see you guys are taking that pond out, fixing that.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that needed to be done. We got that cannon restoration. I know the guy that loads it. He's a friend of mine. So proud of you guys getting that done. he did a lot of work on that, and he had a lot of help to get it done. And that's what we can do here. And you know, that's what my heart is into, identifying those people that's interested in doing that tank or cannon restoration. That means something to them. It means something to our veterans. And our grandkids can go out there and look and be proud of what we've done. That's what that park means to me. We use it for, a lot of people don't know this, for law enforcement. We do our emergency vehicle operation course out there. You know, those roads are shut down, and we use that to teach the young policemen how to drive their cars right. You know, I'd like to see that capitalized on. Will you agree with me? We've got too many repairs coming in on police cars.
Well, that's several sided there too. Yeah.
It's one of Steve's favorite topics.
We've spent more money or given more money to the park in the last 3 years, I think, than's been given out there for quite some time. And I, you know, we're in constant communication, hopefully that money is utilized to its potential, full potential, to do a lot of the needed repairs. But everything out there is so costly. Dredging those ponds and doing that is an enormous undertaking. There was a lot of things that, you know, over the period of years that couldn't get done. They're going to try to address. You've got a lot of infrastructure things out there, water and electric that needs to be redone, roads that need to be addressed. Trying to get all those things done with the small amount of money, because it's never enough. I don't care how much you put into it. It's never going to be enough to get things where they need to be, and trying to get everything developed the way it should be.
While we're dancing around the neighborhood of Memorial Park, I'm going to ask the question now about the Expo Center.
And I'm leaving.
I'm sitting on my hands.
Yep. We've had this conversation with everybody that's been here. I think there's about 67 years left in a lease. It's a 75 year lease. It's been around like a long time, eight years or so. Not that I'm counting or scratching off the years over here, but I think somewhere in that range.
I really don't want to get into the expo, but being you're going to push it.
It's an important issue.
It is. It's been an albatross. And the part I hate about all this is the people who suffered the most by this not being completed were the kids in 4-H that aged out, that were promised a new facility. Now, that being said, we're trying to negotiate some stuff with them now. I've been in close contact with some of the expo people, and I think we're having a lot of forward progress and conversation right now to help possibly get something going. I don't want to jinx it by describing everything that's going on, but I think we've got forward motion now, which is something that
we've had a reset had. And you've got almost a third generation of an expo board and folks that are trying to advance the project.
And I think I made a suggestion 3 years ago, almost, I think it was 2.5 or 3 years ago, some things that I thought might help. And it was at least an olive branch, it seems to be working right now. They're spearheading it. I'm not taking credit for anything. It's just, I wanted to start a conversation because we needed to get some forward motion. I don't know what the answer is, to be honest with you, because you have so many groups and splinter groups involved in this project and how it was set up and how it was designed and how it was implemented. Whether there was miscues or not, that'll be for future generations to decide. What we need to do now is figure out, where do we go from here? Let's stop pointing fingers, because what happened in the past has already happened. We can't fix it. We can't change it. It was started before any of the commissioners that are in office now were here. We got it dumped in our lap, same as everybody else. And now each board has changed and people are different. I mean, like you said, you got different generations of board people on there now. Hopefully we can all come together and try to figure out what we're going to do next. I think that there's a little bit of a light at the end of the tunnel that we're getting there. The problem I have is, no matter how you slice this, the elephant in the room is going to come down to who's paying for it. And I don't believe the county has the financial resources to complete it right now. I'm hoping once this conversation that we're having with them now, if this all comes to fruition, it'll give them an opportunity to concentrate on the building itself and try to get that done. I think it gives them a better shot of being able to complete their project. So I am optimistic at this point that that's going to happen, and hopefully it'll happen sooner than later. But like I said, I don't want to jinx it, because if you start going through the details, then somebody's going to be offended somewhere, and then it messes everything up. I learned that really quick in this job, that if you say too much, it gets things bad.
So Dave Cantrell, you have comments on the expo project and where we're at today?
I want educated on as a taxpayer. Was there somebody, without mentioning names, was there someone that was taking the lead on this and maybe dropped the ball at the beginning? Is that what got us here?
There was
no name.
Well, I'm not sure. But yes, it was very well intentioned.
I agree.
I believe it was, and I believe it still is. I think that there wasn't enough money from the start for them to form. To me, they needed a project manager.
Yes,
that would have helped direct that project. But project managers cost money.
Yes, they do.
So this was my only frustration with it when it was dumped in our lap, was there needed to be something to help assist them to get to a point where they had somebody that was knowledgeable. And I'm not saying anybody on that board and that was involved in that were not knowledgeable. They're very intelligent people, and I know a lot of them, and they have very good intention. But there's sometimes a little bit of that expertise that you need, that somebody would have that would help oversee something, because now you had a board, and it's like anything else. When you get too many cooks in the kitchen, there's too many spoons in the soup. So you're trying to get this to go forward without somebody sitting there being mad at you for what you're doing, because, oh, I would have done it different. But if you had a project manager that would have helped guide and direct, and then took those people from the board and said, this is what we're doing. We did that with the county jail when we built it. We had a project manager. We met every 2 weeks. They told us, these are priorities, these are secondary, this is what you need to do. And if something didn't come in, there was, okay, you've got this over here that we can't get what you ordered, but we can get
this. Yeah.
And this is going to be just as good. Are you okay with it? Those were the decisions that you made to say, okay, we don't want to hold the project up. Here you go. So we were able to make those decisions and keep things. Yes. And things kept flowing that way. I think that would have helped the expo quite a bit.
That answered my question.
Yeah. And I think there were some fundraising challenges too. I mean,
COVID hit and it messed everything up. There was a lot of, it wasn't really missteps. It was just timing was off on several things, and it hurt them. And it's going to be something that is going to have to be redirected, I think, on their part, to see what can they do, and set up a GoFundMe page or something now. So see what we can do.
Is there any role the county can have? We've had this conversation with the city candidates last fall, over bringing utilities in. Or a possibility of getting water, sewer, those sorts of things to that structure. Is that's the one of the biggest challenges we've been hearing?
The water is
that's not there.
The water's the biggest challenge, and we need bigger water supply for Memorial Park. Now, whether we can get it big enough to cover the park and the expo.
Because in theory, you know, if Newcastle or Henry County is going to grow, maybe there's a way to get water going through that park that's going to go out to subdivisions or things that are trending north.
It's who's going to pay for it,
right?
Because that's not a cheap project. So then you're going to have to bond, and that's another tax thing that you're going to have to pay for. Nobody wants to do that. I'll be the first one to tell you, I hate paying taxes, and I know I'm not the only one that does that, but it's a necessary evil sometimes, but it's how much we pay. And when your county, your average median income is what, $28,000 to $34,000 in a year. And then you've got a large portion of your county residents or elderly on a fixed income. When you start raising taxes, you have to be cognizant of how you're impacting those people that are on a fixed income, because now you're negatively affecting them, and they're going to have to make choices that none of us want to have to make. So when we talk about taxes going up, And I can speak a little bit because since I retired, I'm on a fixed income. So you realize real quickly how every little thing negatively affects your bottom line. And so if you're faced with, do you pay this medical bill or your insurance for your house or your house payment, if you're still making one, then what are we doing to these people? So every time we say, okay, this would be great, we raise the tax and cut. No, you don't do that. That's, it's very difficult.
Would you say the 911 tax we just implemented would fall under that category you're talking about?
I justified that as the county saved a few hundred thousand dollars that we were using to fund it. 911, if you go around and ask anybody, and I did this, I've stood in Rural King and Speedway and Walmart and any group of people that walked by, I said, hey, let me ask you a question. Would you pay this tax, which on average was $60 a year for the average person in our county, to guarantee that you had 911 service in your county so that when your loved one or somebody was injured at your home or what have you, or there was a fire and you picked up that phone, that somebody on the other end answered and somebody was being dispatched to help you? Most people reached in their pocket and said, I'll pay it now, because that was a necessity. Do we want to pay more tax? No, but that's a tax that to me is worth having, because that took care of that. And the big thing that people don't realize is that funding went away from the state and just kept dwindling and dwindling and dwindling, mostly because it was based on everybody had a landline. Mm-hmm. Your 911 taxes on landline. How many people still have a landline?
We still pay 911 taxes on cell phones, don't we?
You do, but it's not the same percentage as it was for your landline. So that money went away.
Disappeared.
Yeah.
And we had a handshake agreement with the city of Newcastle, am I correct? Where I think it was $300,000 they would kick in.
Yes, they were paying part and we were paying part.
So that went away.
Yes. Well, it did after the, with the tax.
Yeah.
It didn't until the tax was implemented. Okay. So because there was no need for them to keep paying with that tax, because that tax should make 911 solvent for the foreseeable future. And that was the plan, was to get it to where it wasn't. And sometimes, and I'll say this again, I hate paying taxes, and I don't know of anybody that says, oh, I love paying taxes. But to me, things like that, if you went the little bit higher amount and you made it solvent for the next 20 years, rather than you make the minimum increase and then 5 years, you got to come back and tell the public, we got to raise that again. You shoot yourself in the foot. Because if you can make it solvent for a decade or two decades and you don't have to worry about it again, that money builds. It funds everything that needs to be funded. You don't have to go back to the public and say, oh, we got to do this again. I hate somebody to come back and tell me, oh, yeah, sorry, we made a mistake. And I'm not saying anybody made a mistake, but it was, this is what we're going to do. And there was a thing between the city and the county on how high it should have went.
One more area I want to get into, and then we'll kind of get to where we start to wrap up, and we'll get Zach out by 10:30.
Where's Zach?
We had a really cold winter there for a snap, and the Henry Township trustee opened up a homeless shelter, a warming center that turned into a homeless shelter. The township trustee's office and the city and some insurance agents said that this is not going to operate as a homeless shelter. So that in turn led to some homeless folks living on the sidewalks down here, just a block or two away from the county courthouse. Is there any role for the county in solving this? And we've talked about it on here that there's not necessarily a new homelessness issue, but there's a very visible homeless issue with folks that now are in broad daylight. We can see it. And as a community, I think we've recognized something that maybe we didn't know or realize 6 months or a year ago. It was still probably happening, but it wasn't as visible in the community.
True.
Does the county have any response or ability to be involved in a solution?
We have allocated monies to different shelter organizations to help beef them up. Your biggest issue is, until you talk to your state representatives and have them increase funding, this is a problem that is never going to go away, and the counties cannot financially afford to sustain it. So with that being said, it's a mental issue. This happened when the state shut down all the facilities, left these people with no place to go. And a lot of these people don't want the kind of help that they're getting. So it's hard to address what issues they have. Some of it's addiction, some of it's mental issues. So we don't have the financial resources to sustain in our county those facilities on our own. So until the state or the federal government gives money, and it's going to require the citizens to reach out to your officials on the state and federal level and say, hey, you need to help offset this cost because the counties can't shoulder it alone.
We haven't had state hospitals in 30 years, and this is the result of it.
I think so.
Yeah. All right. Dave, any comments on this one?
I was working in Indianapolis at the time whenever Central State Hospital was shut down, the night when they turned the people out. And there was people with grocery sacks with their belongings wearing hospital gowns walking down the street. That's what that turned into. The media wasn't there to see it, but the ones of us that care were, and it was heartbreaking. I've dealt with the homeless situation in this community. I deal with it almost daily in my life. And I can tell you, I have personally helped a couple people out, get them out of the situation they were in. But it's kind of like that drug addiction that I was dealing with when I was working the drug task force. Person has to want help. You can't force them.
Yes.
This is America. We can't make them go get help. We can't make them accept our charity. We can't make them do that. I think I was put in my position where I'm at now because I actually touched one individual that I didn't know what to do with it. He was turned out at the jail. He didn't have nowhere to go. He had nothing to his name. Something led me to take him to the guest house. And he's there now. He has my phone number. We talk several times a day. He's now the spiritual leader, in my understanding, for that group of individuals at the guest house right now. He's going to help me with this homeless problem because he was homeless. We've got another individual that spoke whenever they had the meeting up at his trustee's office, I think it was, that, you know, Jeff, he's a wonderful guy. Talked about how he was homeless, and he's a resource. I know all these people. If I'm trusted with this position, I'm going to take my working hours to make those phone calls to those people. Corey Criswell is a representative now. I've been with that young man since he was probably 7 years old. I got his phone number. All I got to do is pick it up and call him. And that's my plan. I'm going to do what I can with who wants help, and I'm going to make it a better place.
All right. Last scheduled item we have before we get into final thoughts is the I learned that we can't have a King for the Day segment when we had Susan Hoon and Bobby Plummer in here because they yelled at me. So we changed it to the Monarch for the Day segment. If you guys could make one change, didn't have to ask the rest of county government to do it, what change would you make? And we'll start with you, Dave. You can fix one right away.
It wouldn't cost a dime. Peace. Let's just all work together for a common goal. Make this a better place for all of us. Let's take those chips off everybody's shoulders. We're all in this for the same reason. If you're in it for the right reason, we're in here to help our fellow man, brothers and sisters.
All right.
And that's what I would wish for. And it wouldn't cost a dime. Just be more civil with each other.
Steve, Monarch for the Day. You've been a commissioner for 4 years, but you get to be Monarch. Now we're promoting you. One thing.
Well, I guess if I was going to try to improve something, I would concentrate on infrastructure if I didn't have to answer anybody. But I also believe that even if you're monarch or king or whatever you want to call it, I'll take the heat if somebody yells at you. I don't think any of us should be entrusted with that much power. That's why we have more than one commissioner, and that's why we have council. I believe we all work pretty good together in our county. I think despite what most people think, if we don't challenge each other, then things don't get better because that means we're doing our job. So when any kind of appearance that we're not working together, it's just an appearance because we all play an important role in this. And as an elected official, we're supposed to be here to better our community. And I've said it before, and I'll say it again. If I don't do a good job, then my kids and my grandkids won't stay here. And that would upset me probably more than
anything. That's a high pressure job, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Because those are the people that you want to look up to you at your end times and say, you know, dad or grandpa did a good thing. So, and I always look at it when you're sitting here with your commissioner hat on and you're doing, making decisions, you're not going to make everyone happy. It's impossible. I learned that really quick. But I also take my commissioner hat off when somebody approaches me with something and say, okay, as a regular citizen, taxpayer, neighbor, friend, dad, grandpa, whatever, how does this affect me and my friends and neighbors? And if it doesn't affect me in a positive way, then I shouldn't be doing it.
All right. Let's transition into final thoughts. This is a chance for you guys, if you're paying for signs, if you're looking for volunteers, if there's any issue that we needed to clean up or maybe something that we didn't include in the itinerary today that is an important issue to you, kind of a catch-all segment where we can go there. We'll start with you, Steve, and work our way around.
Final thoughts. As far as campaign issues, this is the part of this job I hated the first time and I hate it now. I feel like you're trying to sell yourself for a vote, and I never did like that. I hope I put enough faith and confidence and trust in the people in the county in the last 4 years to do the job that they elected me to do. I accomplished most of the things that they asked of me the first few months I was in office, and I tried building on that, and I tried to do a good job, and I hope they have the confidence to keep me here. And as far as trying to improve the community, we've done so many things in the last 3.5 years to improve our community. And we got downtown, and I don't take credit for that, but we were, as far as commissioners, very instrumental in supporting everything that goes on. I try to make almost every ribbon cutting since I've been in office, because these are signs that we are doing better and we're revitalizing our community. And to me, that's an important thing, because this, I remember as a kid coming downtown, especially in the holidays. And to me, especially as a kid, it was magical because there were so many businesses up and down Broad Street, and this is where you came to shop. And so I remember tagging along my parents, you know, taking them down to all the shops, and you look in the windows, and you were just awestruck the way it was decorated, the way everything was set up. And I feel like my kids have missed out on that, because it's not what it used to be, but it seems to be coming back. I'm pleased with what downtown's been doing. I'm pleased with some of the businesses that are relocating here and coming in. I'm actually in discussions with a person to try to get a huge employer into our county. I can't say any more about it than that, because it's still in the infant stage. But if it works out, it's going to be huge for Henry County. Hopefully we can capitalize on that. We can bring some things back and make things better. We'll see how it plays out.
Very good. Producer Zach, you've been off the hook. You haven't talked at all tonight.
Yeah.
I'm very disappointed in that, but I think we'll get you home by 9:30. Anything you heard tonight you wanted to ask about or follow up on?
No, some stuff we kind of discussed. Like, I think that there's what happened with the Expo Center. I think they had like a perfect storm of just a bunch of stuff went wrong. Kind of like they had some leadership that left to move elsewhere, and then COVID probably really just jacked up a lot of projects that people were trying to get done. If nothing else, your pre-COVID costs and your post-COVID costs to build anything were astronomically different. Yes. So I do hope something gets done with that. Like, I've spent some time in the park, and it's like it's a nice looking building from the outside. I understand the cost of getting utilities run is astronomical, but we joked last week about the fact that it's ironic that the park overlooks the pump houses where the city gets its water from. But hopefully that gets straightened out. But there's a lot of good ideas. And I do the jail thing. I do wonder, like, well, we had the prosecutor candidates in here when they ran, and some of the attitude at the time was literally like, yeah, we got a new jail, fill it up. And they did that. So
Like, yeah, they did.
They did. And so maybe like they need to go back to some of the ideas that they had during COVID when they were trying to keep people out of jail because they couldn't get the course fast enough, and maybe look at some of those ideas. Because like we don't have to look that far back, like 4 years. I mean, I know that everybody's sense of time, I don't know about anybody else, their sense of time is really broken pre-post-COVID. Like pre-COVID feels like it was a decade ago. Like 4 years ago, people were figuring out how to not get, like if a mom gets pulled over for like driving on suspended and she's got kids, it's in the county's best interest for the most part, if this home life's not horrible, to keep her out of jail so she can take care of the kids. So yeah, that's the only thing I kind of thought of on that. Other than that, they had some good ideas. And so other than that, just I hope everybody, the rain stops and people aren't having to use boats to get around the next couple of days because it just keeps raining. But
I got one cutting done on my lawn so far. And then I tried to do my backyard and we started getting ruts. So we had to put the mower away.
I broke down a mow because I was hosting for a cookout for the eclipse. I did not want to mow. I'm like, it's too early. But there's some yards in my neighborhood that when they finally get it done, it's good. I'm going to sit back in a chair and watch because their mowers are going to be struggling because we've got so much rain that the grass is really growing. So,
all right. Yeah. Very good. Thank you, Zach. Dave Cantrell, thanks for joining us, man.
Hey, yeah, I've enjoyed it. I really have. I enjoyed getting to talk with Steve. You
know, same here.
Been a good evening.
Anything we've forgotten? Ways folks can learn more about the campaign, reach out, all the rest. You
know, I struggle with that, but I drew back on, like I said, history buff, my own history. When I was running the task force, there was a time where money was tighter than it was ever in my tenure as a public servant. And there was a possibility we were going to lose maybe one or two of our officers at the task force. And I had a difficult decision to make, and it was heart-wrenching. Do you go to the devil to get the money? And by that, I'm talking about most of the narcotics purchases that we were making undercover-wise was for OxyContin. And at that time, that was the problem in this area, in East Central Indiana. It was the OxyContin and the opioid addictions. I went right to the source. I went to Purdue Pharma. I wrote a private sector grant, and I was able to use their money. I used the devil's money, and we kept our task force intact. And I think you're enjoying some of the benefits of that today, Steve, with the opioid settlement you got. That wouldn't have happened if there hadn't been some forward-thinking minds at that time of struggle, because we didn't have the money to pay for the people. And at that time, they didn't make what they're making now. When you say the median income, $28,000 for this area, we weren't making that much. We were cops qualified for WIC. We've grown. We've got better. But
still ground to be made up on that front too. Deputies, I think, are $10,000 below what the anticipated median is right now.
Yeah,
for the role.
So, you know, I approached this campaign the same way. I reached out to 40 of my closest friends. Most of them are retired educators. And through that DARE program, I have my networking. Each pledged $100 to my campaign. And I had some hard thinking to do. And I'm looking at these people and they're telling me about how they're struggling to pay for their medicine. They got opened their property tax bill from our Henry County Treasurer. Property taxes went up. They're on fixed incomes like you're now familiar with. Taxes are due here the 15th, you know, we're going to have to pay those too if you've worked over your limit. And I chose not to take $1 for my campaign. I did take one campaign contribution from the sheriff of Henry County. And I'm going to be front up and honest with you. I owe that man nothing. And he has not asked for nothing. You and I, and us in this room, have talked more than I've talked to that man my entire employment. We just don't work the same time. Not that I can or I wouldn't. It's not needed with what I do. I got a close friend that I went through the trenches with that sent word to me that he loves me, but he's not going to vote for me because I support the chair. And if that's the way he feels, I'm sorry. I'm not in it for that. I'm in it to make a difference. I didn't take the money, and I'm not taking any. I don't want any contribution, but I don't want to, you know, I took one contribution, and it was for, I don't know, $1,700 I put in on a record at the courthouse, and that's what I bought my signs with, and I don't need any more. If the folks want to change and they want a different avenue to go, I'm your guy. I know the phone numbers to call and make things happen, and I'll make it a better place.
All right.
That's what I've got.
We thank you both for joining us. I do have to say we have bills to pay here too. So I do want to thank one more time, Weiland's Flowers and Ink and Ale Brewhouse for sponsoring the candidate series, and being a part of that. Weiland's has been with us since the very beginning, since we did our first version of this in 2018, I think. So it's been a very long time doing the candidate series, and they've been with us since the very beginning. Early voting is happening now. So I think as of Wednesday, the polls opened. So this is the cheat code, guys. If you go vote now, early, your mailbox will stop filling up. Those campaigns for Congress, they watch and see when you voted, and they will take you off the list.
Do they really?
Yes. So if you go vote now.
You just sold me on that, man.
They monitor who has voted, and the direct mail will stop. They know you're off the list and you're no longer eligible. So if you go vote early, knock it out. They will.
Does that go for text messages too?
They should start to purge your name and information.
That should be a the more PSA. They are. I would be okay
That's why you listen to the end of the show, Zach.
I would be okay with my tax dollars going to a message on the news telling me that if I vote that I'll stop getting these monster mailers. Sophisticated.
They are bigger than my mailbox.
Some of them have been like poster size. Like, and it's not local race. I mean, it's not a local race.
It's a congressional race.
It's a congressional race. Oh, my God. Can they just, you know what would be better? Just send me the money that thing costs. Just send me the money.
Early vote now. Thank you guys both for running and being a part of the process. I think that this makes the community much more educated about what's happening in the county because we go through this process. Steve, you signing up and putting yourself through another 4 years of torture potentially, and you, Dave, for making it a race and giving folks a choice to so that we have something to talk about. Next week we will have Judge David McCord. He'll be joining us. So we've just got a few weeks left. We're in the final month now of the candidate series. And I am so greatly looking forward to talking about something other than politics for a little while. As much as I love having all these guys on with us, I'm about over it too. This is like, we had like 9 or 10 weeks in a row of the candidate series.
And then Jeremiah spent so much time trying to schedule people. And just to pick on him, the Republicans love to schedule stuff on Thursdays.
Oh, yeah. Talk to your people.
Yeah.
Talk to your people.
Yeah. And so Jeremiah struggles to find Kyle because there's like, they've got 3 or 4 different Thursdays that they schedule stuff, and they're all like, yeah, I can't make it because I got this and got the hot dog cookout and then the brat cookout and then the club cookout.
You want to talk to the same 7 Republicans that they're at every meeting with you, or maybe 1,000 new voters? I don't know. You guys decide how you want to spend your time. With that, thank you so much for being a part of it. And we will see you Thursday of next week.